You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? On the road again. We have been on the road, I think, for far too long, Tony. And it has been far, far too long since we made a quick trip down a dirt road and stopped in at the Guidepost to refill our fly boxes, get a couple plugs, and maybe a spool later and talk about what the heck is going on in the world of fish. So extremely excited to be back. I know we just put up a couple episodes that are comprehensive recordings of our incredible guest speakers at the most recent ASGA Fishery Science Symposium. So we've got a couple new listens there that are pretty lengthy, but I mean, just absolutely incredible. But it's been far too long since me and you hopped on here and just talked about the team, what's going on. So I think we're going to call this one an ASGA roundup here. And what the heck is going on with ASGA? And it, for anyone who has not seen an episode pop up in recent weeks, it is not because we're not doing anything. Contrary to popular belief, we have not been on vacation in Mexico with our feet up in the air and a mojito in hand. It has been quite busy, but consider this the resurrection of one of our favorite things to do as a member of the ASGA team, which is hop on the Guidepost podcast. Tony, what is up? How are you feeling? How are you living? What the hell is going on with every major fish I care about? Let's get this thing rolling.
L-I-V-I-N. Living. I'll tell you what. I mean this absolutely sincerely. I'm not joking. This podcast is incredibly important to us. Since we started it, we've never taken a break this long. We're just going to hit the high points in this one, bring all of y'all back, let you know, we're going to get back in our rhythm. I think it's been since like March, April, you know, we really got super busy and, you know, it was all good stuff, but we just didn't have a time to sit down at the microphone. And this is one of the best ways that we can communicate with y'all. So sorry, it won't happen again. And it was all good stuff. So, you know,
Cody, the good news is it happened in the spring, right? So a lot of our people, at least it wasn't during the winter when everyone's stuck inside, time flies, cold and miserable, 80% of the country. At least we know a lot of our guys are out fishing, they're out working. And so this would be a good catch up for all y'all. Split it over the next couple rides to the boat ramp over the next few days. But
before we even get going, I think Cody's going to try to get this out today. So I just want to wish a happy Father's Day to all my friends, all the listeners. You know, there's a ton of good dads out there. You know, spend some time with the people that you love tomorrow. For me to you, happy Father's Day. You know, it means a lot.
Worth saying happy Mother's Day as well. We would have wished the incredible moms out there who take people fishing. And we wished all of those in our lives. But unfortunately, that was during our lull points.
Yeah. So,
and I think when I just brought that up, Tony, you got that drop in your chest when you you forget an anniversary or mom's birthday or something, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah, before you said Mother's Day, I was like, oh no. That's why she's been mad for 3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Cody, we want to keep this upbeat. We're just happy that y'all are listening. Again, not going to say it again. Sorry for being gone for so long, but Cody, why don't we talk about like the community stuff? I mean, I think that's just fun, you know.
It's the positive stuff. Everyone to
know what we've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Start with beer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you do not enjoy beer, and I'm not even the biggest beer drinker, but when it comes to this one, I'm a big fan. If you don't enjoy beer, maybe fast forward 60 seconds. But no, all jokes aside, we have some really incredible community supporters and partners, a more appropriate term for this, because what we are up to and what we're trying to do, it just doesn't happen without the brands, the businesses, the organizations, the fishing clubs, the groups who already have unity. They already have a voice, and they see what we're up to and they believe in what we're up to. And we've had one who's been a great supporter for many years. He's run events to support us, to amplify the message, to continue to unify the community on his terms. And I mean that in a positive way, and in his style and his flair. And we got a call. Time's flying, so I don't even know if at any point in this time, this podcast, I say like a week ago, it's probably like a month ago or 2 months ago. But, you know, we had a call a couple months back with Tim Adams from Oxbow Brewing in Maine. And as many of y'all know, I got my degree in marine bio at the University of Maine. Maine is my second home. When people ask where I'm from, I normally say I'm from Massachusetts, but I was raised by Maine. So I got a lot of love for Maine and all my angling community up there. And Tim's a big part of that. And he's always hosted the All Species Tournament for us, which we're going to have to touch on a little bit later in this podcast because it's coming up again this fall. But we got a call from Tim. And the first news update that wasn't even connected to this beer was that he was going to be going forward, working with and merging with Rising Tide Brewing, also out of Maine. And we get this call from Tim and Alex, who are upstanding gentlemen, businessmen, small business runners, and also anglers. And they're like, hey, and this is the sentence that I think made Tony's heart drop even more than, you know, Mother's Day and Father's Day, was, we want to make a beer for you. And it wasn't, you know, make a beer that you guys can sell at your events or something like this. It was, we want to make a beer that helps amplify the message of what's going on with striped bass, specifically being an entry point in a way for people who love beer, who are around the coast, but who probably don't know what's going on right now. And we talk about all the time, Tony, trying to make sure we don't operate in an echo chamber, that we don't have 10 friends and we say, hey, everyone, here's the things we believe. And our 9-10 friends tell us, yes, you do. Well, this is the best. And it's this little self-fulfilling prophecy and it really doesn't get anything done. So when Tim and Alex come to us and say, hey, we've got an idea and we think this can help amplify the striped bass message in a way that people can interact with it. And I mean this in a, from a marketing sense, like a soft touch, like, hey, enjoy a cold beer. Look at this badass artwork on this can, man. I love fishing. All right. Striper season on the, I gotta try one of those. Crack it. Totally crushable. Incredible, incredible beer. And one or two of those goes down on a nice sunny day in the spring and the summer. And you're reading the can and you go, wait, striped bass aren't doing good. And I didn't really know that. I fish all the time.
This may come as a shock to you, but I'm not one of those, like, I don't smell my beer before I drink it kind of guys, you know, with
you're like, not like little, one of those, oh, I'm getting hints of mahogany in this, yeah, one. Little, you're not one of those little guys.
Ooh, the smoky walnut, like they roll up their jeans. Like, that's not me. I'm kind of like a, you know, like a, it's kind of funny. I'm kind of set myself up for a joke here. I'm a stout guy.
I won't say it. I won't say it.
It's okay, man. Everyone thought it. What is the exact, I know Tim was very specific about the exact kind of beer this was, because I got to tell, I don't remember anything like that. Tim was standing right next to me. I cracked it at the science symposium. I took a drink. I could kind of see, you know, it's pretty, not like, oh, this.
I didn't even realize my microphone was on. I thought you were just ignoring me. I didn't even realize I was on mute. So you can tell we're out of our rhythm here, but it's a Kolsch style ale. So it's got a Kolsch style ale. So very light, very light, very, when they use the word crushable, you see that marketed in beers a lot. This thing's crushable. This thing goes down real easy.
Oh, no. I agree. this is something that you can get a hold of, like sitting around a pool, cookout. You're doing a slow smoke on a meatloaf. You got 2.5 hours to go. And there's a little six pack just sitting there teasing you. And I mean, they just go down. Like, I'll just leave it at that. They go down. Everyone that you buy, portion of it goes to us. and it goes directly to striped bass conservation. So enormous tip of the cap to Tim at Oxbow Brewing. And it's one of the coolest cans you ever want to see. You can hop on the website and take a look at it.
Yeah. Actually, I just realized it's not in our main header menu right now. So we'll update that under initiatives. I mean, we always joke about this. When this went live, Tony and I exchanged a pair of texts that were the exact same words and literally just said, "We have a beer now, period." Like, I mean, pretty wild to see where ASG is going and all the different ways that we're expanding past just being fishermen. But so
all the stuff that we do, I just want everyone, look, man, there's a vast proportion of people who are listening to this and they're smarter than me. So I am not getting on a soapbox over this, but I want everyone just to think, if in some way in the road of your life that you get a beer, you will feel the coolness that we felt for a moment because you're like, wait a minute, we have a beer.
And the artwork is incredible, man. And that was one of my things too. You know, like I said, I'm not a huge beer guy. Me and you are of the same, not an insane IPA with all these crazy notes and flavors. That's not really my vibe when I choose to have an adult beverage. So I was a little hesitant, or not hesitant, but I guess eager to see what the product would be. And when I got one sip, I was like, oh yeah, it makes it that much easier that this is something I want to get my hands on. But look, the artwork is absolutely incredible. Yeah, we need to touch on
You cannot. It's cool thing here. And I'll put it to you like this. Like, you know, some of the real, real light beers, kind of just like drinking water. And then back many years ago, we were hanging out around a pool and someone was like, hey, man, you want one of these iced tea things? And I was like, iced tea? Cool. And I sucked it back in like under 5 seconds. And I was like, does that have alcohol in it? And they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, you know, I don't even care what I look like. Give me about 18 more of them. It's that kind of cool. It's just, it's so good that you kind of, I don't know.
I was about to say, I was going to say like two more things on the topic. I guess I'll slide it in now, but everyone drink responsibly. Obviously, drink responsibly, consume, you know, at a reasonable pace, and do not drink and drive and all the other things that a beer ad would throw in at the end of a Super Bowl commercial. But in reality, for those who enjoy an adult beverage, this is keep an eye out for it. A lot of people have been asking, how the heck can we help out here? And the solution to it, obviously, is not to sit at home and drink as many as you can to keep fundraising. No, the reality is how do we get this message to as many people as possible to learn about what's going on? The beer has a landing page on our website that has a very, very high level. You know, our listeners right now are very aware of what's been going on with striped bass, from this amendment to that addendum to spawning stock biomass. And, you know, this is to capture people who love the ocean, run a business by the ocean. Striped bass are integral to their community, whether they run a hotel or a restaurant on the Cape or an island, you know, another business down on Block Island, whatever it may be. You're anywhere from North Carolina to Maine and you got a business that's connected to the ocean. And to try to capture people who might not realize that something in their backyard is struggling. And then also for people who are around, you know, visiting, right, around the country, popping in, and they can learn the story in a way that's a really soft touch point. So how can you help Striker Season, the beer campaign? Go to your local watering hole. If you got a restaurant that's on the water, you got a local package store you pick stuff up at, whatever it may be that sells beverages of this style, and ask them if they got it. Ask them if they have any plans to carry it. I think it's as important for people who want to support this campaign to buy a 4-pack and check it out as it is to try to help ensure that this product expands to the masses for an awareness campaign. So that's the main goal here, is to get more people to understand what the heck's going on with striped bass. So next time you're at your local watering hole, ask them why they don't carry it yet. And we'll go from there. And if you get to try a can, obviously tag Oxbow, tag Rising Tide, tag ASGA, let us know what you think of it. I've seen it starting to bop around. There's different places, and some of them can be pretty hard to get. You know, that beer space, Tony, you know this as a connoisseur of many beverages, right? That's a hard thing to crack into. And Tim's already got an outstanding reputation in that space, but coming up with something else and then trying to get it, you know, all those beverages from all the different alcoholic to even non-alcoholic options, they're competing for shelf space and share of mouth, as Gary V used to say, when it comes to liquid and beverage. And so the fact that he's been able to bounce around, I mean, big shout out to the Yeti guys. I know the Yeti team flew up there around the Schooley tournament. They're on the Cape and they were bouncing around to all the main spots, trying to seed that product in. And the response has just been overwhelming as far as like, yes, this is rad. This is a great product. And how do we get it now? And even with some places that are typically a little bit difficult to get stuff into. So, outstanding news. We're 15 minutes into our catch up with people and we've only talked about beer. So things are going the way Tony would like. But yeah, learn more about Striper Season, as it is called, Incredible Brew. Big shout out to Tim, Alex, and everyone else involved with that. And why don't we call that a checkbox there? We'll touch on all species in a little bit, but to keep bouncing off of our wild and crazy community activity, I guess, the last couple months. Tony, we're not going to be able to do this one justice, and it probably deserves its own recap too, but just for a brief couple minutes, one of the major reasons we were a little quiet on social and podcasts and all the other stuff we had going on was Lefty Crazed Tie Fest. Happened at the end of April. We talked about it a little bit before leading in. We haven't really done a full true recap in a way that was deserving, but monster event. So incredibly grateful, thankful for everyone that was involved. We had a whole day of fly tying and seminars with legends, Andy Mill to Pat Forrest, photographer, Rob Fordyce on the bow of Flip Pallet Skiff connected to the Frigate Reserve Defender. I mean, like what is even going on? It was madness. It was the who's who of all these incredible people, all there under the umbrella of giving back to the angling community, under the umbrella of Lefty, who was a dear mentor and friend to so many, and all of Lefty's disciples really, really carried the workload on this event. So that was incredible. All the funds raised went to Jack Raval Research. We're going to dive into that on the research and science side here in a second. But maybe just one more quick little blurb, if you got one, Tony. I mean, it would be easy to talk for about 6 hours just about that event alone, but that was the monster that gobbled our spring.
Somebody who ran it for a very long time. I saw some stuff that I just thought was so cool. So, you know, Lefty lived up here, but a really critical part of his life in fishing, in writing, that took place down in South Florida. So it was the first time, obviously, doing the event down there. And it was so cool seeing that other part of his life and seeing how awesome those people were too. Because the people up here that were part of his life, some of the best people you ever want to meet. And it was like, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, oh, this is the whole other side of the family. And I think everyone felt that way. It was really cool. We cannot, there's when Cody brought this up, my throat tightened up because there's so many people to thank. And I'm like, oh man, I hope I don't miss anybody, you know, but there's one person to thank. That I would feel like horrible human if I didn't, and that's Carter Andrews. The guy went so far above and beyond for us in any way, shape, or form. He is one of the most quality humans you will ever meet, as is his family, as are his people and extended family. And just a heartfelt thanks for us to be able to share this event down there with Lefty's other side of the family, and to have it, you know, really spearheaded by Carter. And I don't know a single person who didn't have a good time. So thank you.
Yeah.
It was an awesome event.
We should be succinct on this one, and let's close it out with this, Tony. For those of you who did not attend,
if we could get Carter on this, but like his voice, his personality, to talk about like what he thought about Ty Fest. Good luck with that. But he is also one of the funniest people.
That is also very true.
And honest, and he would be a hoot.
You know what? I'm going to say something. I do have one thing that I hated about Ty Fest. I have a single thing that I did not like. Like you just said, Carter's the man, so humble, so well-traveled, so funny. Like, this is someone you want to hang out with for 8 hours, toast the Striper season, and hear all their stories and ask questions. The worst part about Ty Fest is it was like total overstimulation. There was like too many things going on, like too many incredible people. And it was like, how do I want to sit here and hang out with Carter for 45 minutes and hear all these incredible things about his last trip to the Bahamas, or like the time he trailered his 37-foot boat from Florida to Washington just to fish for X. Like, I want to hear all that. And then while you're talking with Carter, like Andy Mill walks by and he's like, this is how I've dialed in the exact flight on for tarpon. You know, and you're like, dude, this is insane.
This is my only regret. You know how they say, like, what is that? Whatever that saying is, that we've said it on here before, that you meet your, it's always disappointing to meet your heroes and every, you know,
yeah, never meet your idols, say, right?
Never meet your idols. So, you know, that was big thing with that was like Lefty was 10 times better than anyone could have ever imagined. And it was really impressive to see, you know, some people that were there that I didn't know that have an enormous presence in fishing. And they all stood out. But the one that, you know, I regret, the one I really didn't get a chance to talk to or thank, and just impressed me from the first moment that I saw them to the time that I saw them leaving the event, worked as hard as we did. Like, we were moving tables, we were moving chairs, make sure the water's filled, you know, running around like little busy bees. And every time I turned around, this guy's just profusely sweating, working his ass off, teaching people everything he knows about fly fishing. And, you know, was part of the Legends Roundtable at the end. And, you know, the things that he said about Lefty were so incredibly true, profound. You just had to look in his eyes and you knew the connection was there. And I really didn't get an opportunity to thank him to the level that I should. But if anyone ever gets a chance to meet the guy, Rob Fordyce is about as good as it gets. And I'd strongly recommend that if you have an opportunity. He is a treasure to the sport. So
yeah,
I'd say that.
Here's too. The thing. If you want to be in what I would call the NBA All-Star game of fly fishing with all these incredible people around, to just world-class people in one place. So many brands, so many upcoming tires too, right? Not just the legends of the sport, but also the guys who have to carry the torch and kind of the spirit of the event going forward. We're just going to leave you with a little teaser, which is I would set aside your travel funds and, you know, mark your calendars and tell your wife that you've got some sort of fishing trip planned. But no, all jokes aside, this thing's coming back and it's going to be on the back half of April next year. And all I'm going to say is more details to come, but I would tread lightly before, you know, you book your trip to X, Y, or Z, or maybe you go in on that third new 12 weight rod that you still don't need because you haven't used the other two. Keep an eye on April of 2026.
Yeah. So take us right into the next community thing. I mean, so we had Ty Fest, and the thing that when we were planning that, we were also under a deadline to start the Jack project, because Ty Fest was really a 3-day event, right? It was the movie on Friday. It was a four-part event. It was a movie on Friday. It was the kind of festival event Saturday to Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon to Saturday evening was the fundraising dinner for the Jack Project. And then Sunday, we sent as many people out as we could tagging Jacks. So Jack Project launched. We're going to be tagging Jacks from South Carolina to Texas with
small zone.
Very small area. Easy
one boat, one day, too.
You know, it's one day. Is getting the permits for each state, Cody. That's like, that's been, yeah. No, actually, just to make everyone laugh, grip your steering wheel with two hands. So we were told there's a pretty big lead time on the tags. We knew this from the previous thing. So, you know, Cody and I were like, okay, we need to order the tags by this day. And that will give us a month. So we were ordering the tags. Let's say there's an 8-week delay, and then we put another month buffer in. I get a message in my email that says, hello, this is Customs and Border Patrol in Memphis, Tennessee. We have your package. You're not getting it until you fill out a stack of paperwork. So
this was FedEx too, to be clear. So if you're thinking of UPS, UPS just came, they stopped by. Great, honorable people. We try not to really lobby as ASGA, really get behind a political candidate. But if there was a 3-man race for best shipping carrier right now in the country, I could tell you unequivocally, I would put all my dollars anywhere that kept FedEx out of gaining reign, because FedEx.
So yeah, let's,
you have my crosshairs.
I was going to tie in that at the end. So tags are a custom border control. We have a month to get them out. What's plan B? There's always a plan B, right? Let's see if we can get them from another one of our friend associations. Let's see if they have any that we can borrow that are the same size, the same everything. And we can get those into the fish for Sunday after Thai Fest. Shout out to Lower Keys Guides Association. Thank you so much for having tags. We will be sending you your tags with a little bit more than a month lead time when the Jacks show up, just in case Customs and Border Patrol attacks again. So
we get the tags. There's one detail. I was going to say there's one detail from when we get the tags, the day we landed them. Were you going there? Because I was driving home. They were supposed to be delivered on a Saturday, but you needed to sign for them. And right. I was fishing on the time. But
Thai Fest was over.
Yes.
Yeah. So Thai Fest is over. And then I get the magic email from Customs and Border Patrol that says your shit will be delivered tomorrow.
But which Cody was Saturday.
Cody's
fishing. So then I get home to like one of those sheets saying like, hey, you know, we'll be back on Monday. I'm like, oh, what a pain, right? Whatever. It's, you know, it's 2 days where I did, you know, whatever.
Hey, listen, this was $8,000 worth of tags that have limited battery life.
Yep. So
it's worse when they're in the air than when they're in the water. So let's just throw that little. Yeah.
I was fishing Monday. And I got off a little bit earlier than I normally do. I always extend a little bit past my hours because I enjoy what I do. But this time I got off a little bit earlier and my phone goes off. My Ring camera is someone at my front door and I'm trailering home. And I open it. It's the FedEx guy. I'm like, hey, man, I'm literally just around the corner. I'm like 90 seconds away from my house. And he's like looking around. I was like, I'm not waiting. I'm like, come on, man. Like I've been trying to get a hold of these. I'll be home here soon. So he's like, well, meet me at this road. It's on the other side of your other road, you know, in your neighborhood. And I'll just give them to you there. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm towing my truck I'm towing my boat now, bay boat, 23-foot bay boat. And I come around the corner and I'm pulling up to my neighborhood. And I see this MFer pulling out of my neighborhood. And most people would be like, what the heck? You know, ugh, another day without them. And I got mad and I was like, no, I'm catching you. So I was ripping through like Ricky Bobby, you know, a 50-foot rig with boat and trailer, ripping through different lanes, dodging grandmas, trying to get home to their grandkids. And I pull up next to this guy at the light and I'm like, you window down now. And he's like, right away, he goes, Cody Rubner? I'm like, yeah, give me my tags, buddy. And then he was like saying something about how he didn't want to. And then I'm like, you're going to give me those tags. Like, I'm next to you. You have my product. And he's like, fine, meet me in Costco. So I raced about a mile up the road and I was chasing him, dodging him through traffic. And then he pulls over and he goes, well, do you have ID? You need to prove you're Cody. I'm like, how would I have access to Cody's Ring camera, Cody's boat and truck, know that you are looking for Cody, know where you are going to be, and be the same person you talked to on my Ring camera pulling a blue boat at full speed? But long story short, the gentleman conceded. We got our tags. Shout out to LKGA. And then I called Tony. He's like, what have you been up to the last 20 minutes? And I'm like, you don't even want to know.
No, you actually sent me a text while you were in hot pursuit. You sent me a text of the front of your truck on the highway.
Chasing FedEx.
Yeah. Like, I'm going. Yeah. So anyway, Jack Project, that launched. We've got the first set of telemetry tags out. Just got word that the Jacks are showing up pretty consistently now in Louisiana. Working through, I guess we got the permit from South Carolina, so we're going to start setting those up. And we're just going.
The tagging experience, I can hop in real quick, Tony, just because we've done the first half dozen out of Stewart. Able to get someone from the lab from FIU to come up for one of the first trips. We've been able to do a handful on guide trips before. And then obviously we put out the, I think it was five or six right after Tie Fest, but really cool process. Really cool. Requires, it's in depth, but you basically get these fish. You want to land them really quickly, get them into the boat. You go through your whole process of documenting your tag, make sure the magnet comes off and then it starts to tag up. And you just do a light incision into this fish's body cavity. And it's kind of crazy. It feels weird, but you almost like start filleting a fish. And you get just past this little body cavity opening about, I don't know, maybe an inch or more. It would kind of depends on the size of the fish, and every fish is a little bit different. And then this little basically AA size battery pops right in, and then you hold the skin together. And with a lot of other really good research that you've seen from all sorts of different groups and labs, they'll use sutures normally on like redfish, bonefish, stuff like that. Jacks, with their skin, their body type, how they are put together, works really good with a skin stapler, actually. So you pinch them together, bop, 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 down the row, they're stapled up. And every one of these fish that I've done, I mean, literally is like Mike Tyson on a counter punch on the way out the boat. It's like, pop, pop, get off me. And they kick off. And so super excited to see where all these fish go. We already have some really cool stuff in the works around the arrays and other different dynamics that we can't release just yet about trying to document this spawning cycle a little bit better next year. But we have a lot to learn. We got a dozen tags out right now. We're working our way towards 100 across all the different states that Tony talked about. And big shout out to FIU, MSU, Lower Keys Guide Association, everyone involved. We're going to take this thing from South Carolina to Texas and figure out what the heck is going on with Jack Crevalles. And this is a perfect lead in, Tony. Let's bounce back from science to community. Another great community partner who makes a really cool product and is well established and could just sell the product in and of itself because the product is really cool. But continues to use his brand's voice to amplify worthy messaging, whether that's conservation of fisheries or water or whatever it may be. So Edgar from Sightlines Provisions, we had a great call with him a few months ago, and he's like, what if we made a custom jack band? And we were thinking, we're like, well, we already had these certain plans around our tags and sponsor tags. Why don't we combine all this together? So some really fruitful conversations and a little strategy comes together. And all of a sudden you have these Tag a Jack products. And so these are live now on the website. I don't know exactly how many are down. Let's see if I can find this really quick so I give it an exact number. But you go to the ASGA website, you go to shop. It's the top featured project or product. Excuse me, Tag a Jack, Sightlines custom product. But basically, you can go in and pick your tag number 1 through 45. And there's, geez, I don't know, maybe 15 or so already sold out really early into this. But you get to pick your tag number. That tag is going to correspond to a tagged Jack in that set of 100 tags that we have going on. And you also get to pick, do you want it as a custom Sightlines bracelet, or for those who don't, you know, prefer to wear jewelry around a leather bracelet, you can just get it as a keychain, still on leather, still pressed the same way, same exact product, just for those who don't like to wear stuff on their wrists. But really, really cool, because now we can fundraise where the cost is equal to the cost of one tag. You are contributing one tag to this project, and then you're entered, you know, basically into this VIP club of Jack tagging data and participation. And so everyone will get reports when we get tagging data and find out more about these fish. You will find out where your fish went and start to learn its story and be a part of this entire ecosystem of Jack knowledge that we're building. And we have some prizes that haven't been announced yet, but there's gonna be prizes for the one that swims the furthest, you know, raffle for ones that disappear or never ping. There's all sorts of fun stuff to participate in this, but it helps to continue to fund this in a way that ASGA, a lot of these things that we work on are community driven, and we would not be working on things that our community didn't care about. And this is the way that community can contribute to these projects. So big shout out to Edgar. The Tag-A-Jack products are on the website right now. $450 covers the cost of the tag. You get to pick your product and then they'll ship out. And I think Edgar's already working on the first batch. So really, really exciting there. And we can probably close out the Jack project. We'll have to have the FIU team on here soon, Tony, and all of our superstar taggers, from Scotty and the guys in South Carolina, wrapping all the way down to the Keys and all the way down to Yako Lucas out in Texas, right? So all really cool stuff. Oh, actually, I will pop in. We'll pop in one more thing that's Jack related, which is you will see there's some social paid ads running right now, and you'll see the organic stuff here launch soon. But had a really cool call with the Museum of Fly Fishing. This was actually around the time we had Tie Fest going, and all within the spirit of those who came before us and where fly fishing is going. And we were able to build out this collaborative membership campaign. And so people right now can go buy a package. What it comes with is a membership to the Museum of Fly Fishing, a membership to ASGA, and you also get a custom fly box. That fly box has the Jack logo on it with both of our names on it, which is really cool. But here's the special part, Tony, and I know you're probably going to go buy up every one of them just so you can secure this opportunity. One of them's going to have a golden popper in there. And outside of getting another great fly that you can throw on the beach, the person who wins that, finds that random popper in that fly box with their two new memberships, wins a tagging trip with Yako Lucas in Texas for Jacks, which fishing with Yako has got to be one of the coolest things you can do with your pants on. So outstanding campaign. We're excited to be working with the museum. Y'all see us put a little bit more about that live here in the next couple of weeks, but really, really cool. There's a lot of love for Jack Crevall right now.
So we're going in chronological order. So less than 2 weeks from us all getting home, we had the science symposium. And I remember looking at the team and being like, this is going to be easier than falling off a log after what we just went through. And we pretty much, it was. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't awesome. It was just the scope of setting something up like that after we've been through all the other things was just nothing in comparison. And it actually went pretty well. We had our Dr. Ben Meadows, purveyor of natural resources economics, give a talk. Greg Skomel, who is basically, I don't know,
North the Wizard America, of Great White Sharks.
Yeah, North America's foremost expert on great whites. You know, it was funny. Last week, I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, man, I want to catch up. And he was like, I'm in the Caribbean tagging sharks. I have a layover. I'll call you on Friday. And it was just funny. I'm like, holy man, I got in quit. So we had Walt Gillette, with his lab. And he is another one. I don't really know if anyone on the planet knows more about bluefin tuna. And there was a little scientist rivalry between Walt and Greg that I'll point out, challenging each other in science, the best of science humor. If a great white or a bluefin tuna was cooler, I'll let you decide. I have my own feelings. And then Cody, am I leaving anyone out? We had Ben, Greg.
No, that was our three main speakers, and Walt, we did an intro at the start. We did an intro. But when it comes to those three people, we are definitely in fourth place.
I forgot us. That was okay. So that was Friday at Woods Hole. Thank you very much, Woods Hole, for allowing us to host our event there again. And then Friday evening, and then again on Saturday, the ASGA team had to man the booth at the Cheeky Schoolie tournament. So we're just trying to prove a point that we weren't lollygagging, that there's been quite a bit going on. It's kind of like you don't even realize it until you say it. While my awesome crack team was doing a bang up job with the busiest table at the event, I was sitting behind a school bus in a tunnel very close to Logan Airport, not moving. And then my flight was delayed for God knows how long. And I don't think I ended up getting home until a little bit after 1 a.m. I was pretty beat up. So then Cody, what was that? Jesus, Mary and Joe. So that brings us to almost Memorial Weekend. And I would say since then, we have legitimately just been trying to keep our heads above water and catch up on everything that's going on. So that's kind of from the community side. From the policy side, look, I'm just going to say, like, striped bass, we got to talk. And I don't know if this is the format. We're already 40 something minutes into the podcast. We'll do another.
Definitely worthy of its own. The podcast is coming back, by the way. I mean, it never left. We were just busy doing other crap, but we got a lot on the horizon.
You know, I think that kind of deserves its own deal. So we'll do a podcast. We'll do a podcast just on stripers. We're working through redfish, in the Atlantic. There's going to be hopefully a little bit of conservation action, maybe a little proactive action in one area, and definitely some conservation in another. So it's going in the right direction. Redfish are going in the right direction, I think, with management. In the Atlantic. And drum roll, please. We are a few short days away. As a matter of fact, 1 week. Today's the 14th. Unless something crazy happens, and it is Louisiana, to no more bow fishing in the Biloxi Marsh. No more nighttime activities unless you're a duck hunter going to your blind. No more mud motors tearing up the marsh. Cody, can I talk about this for a second? Because bow fishing really, I don't understand it, y'all. Look, if you're eating what you shoot and you're not shooting too much, or it's some horrific invasive species and you see native species that people view as non-consumptive, gar, you know, all sorts of species of gar, spotted gar, long-nosed gar, alligator gar, buffalo, three different species of buffalo. And you just, and Louisiana, they don't really shoot buffalo, but they'll knock the brakes off a gar. It's just, to me, it's just wanton waste. It's horrible. And it's, you know, it's not just Louisiana that suffers from this. I've been following an issue in Oklahoma, and they just pummel gar, buffalo, horrible, dumpsters full. And for a variety of reasons, Oklahoma is having serious problem with their freshwater mussel population. Guess what it is? Oh, well, one of the issues, you know, it's always death by a thousand cuts. Buffalo are part of the natural life cycle of a freshwater mussel. The larva kind of lives in their stomach for a certain part of the life cycle, and then the poops it out and becomes a little freshwater mussel. So Oklahoma tried to put regulations in for a limit of 10 per day of native, you know, air quote, rough fish. And it was supposed to go through. It was backed on science. They're having the mussel problems. They have dam issue. You name it, man. And they're just shooting the bejesus out of them. And it looked like it was going to go through, and it didn't go through because there was a public outcry. And then they said, well, we need to do more. You need to do more research on this. Couldn't be hurting things that bad. Just think, I just want you to think for a second with hunters, right? Like, there are certain things, you know, snogies, you know, some like resident goose, Canadian goose hunts, where, you know, like snogies, you can see 25 of them. All right. So take that, put it on a shelf. I'm not going to get into snogies. Put that on a shelf. Think about what else you hunt and what your limits are. Imagine going and shooting as many as you can every night. That's all I'll say about that. It's terrible. So anyway, a lot of our fishermen fish the Biloxi Marsh. They've seen everything from redfish, big bull redfish swimming by with an arrow in their head. And I have a video of that. So don't, you see prop scars. One of the best comments that I heard at the hearing last month was, well, yeah, we leave prop scars, but they get silted over by that evening. Well, guess what, Buster? Guess what that does? Depletes the oxygen in the pond that you're in, because that silt is different than the sediment, the bottom that you disturbed. It's pretty much decaying organic matter. And the aerobic activities to break that down depletes oxygen in the water. So keep talking. In any event, at nighttime, they were disturbing ducks. They're tearing up the marsh. They're shooting the crap out of redfish, disturbing the redfish at night. Nothing gets to rest. Nothing gets to do anything. Done, get a break. It's not going to be allowed in the 40,000 some odd acres of Biloxi Marsh. And I think it is a huge step forward, enormous step forward in the sustainability of duck hunters.
Yeah, it's mission critical that we continue to lean into some of these common sense things that ain't been so common in recent years. And also look, Tony, that the track record, right? I mean, we went 35 years. Did it get to 36? I don't know the exact amount. It was at least 35 years, basically, day to day from regulatory changes for redfish in Louisiana. So you have 3.5 decades of nothing, no change on behalf of the fish. And then in the last few years, you look at those changes to set a new baseline, saying like, hey, we love these fish. Everyone's still welcome to keep them and eat them. And here's the slot that we think is the most appropriate. But you have these changes in regulation, and one of the staples that really no one was against. I mean, Tony, down to those first few meetings against the regulatory changes, I don't even remember. Even the guys on the other side were like, fine, don't change the, you know, don't change the creel, don't change the slot. But, you know, none of us want bull reds, right? Like, everyone was kind of on the same page. Like, yeah, we shouldn't be killing these big breeding fish. No one wants to eat them. That's fine. So you look at down the aisle, one of the few things that in those conversations, people were meeting in the middle on. And then we're a little out of chronological order here, but you go back to this April as well. And you have our friend, your dear, dear friend. I'll let you say some pleasantries to him for his support of protecting and sustaining our fisheries in Louisiana after. But you have this House Bill 604 come up there where Representative Orgeron proposes that we should start killing. This is a real statement. So if the irony is not lost on you and you think I'm like being the Onion, that this is a fake news article, we should kill bull redfish for the cost of a cheap tag and use that tag to fund stocking redfish. I'll put it in an applause break right here. And then like one of those like Family Matters laughter breaks right now, maybe I'll put one of those in too. You know, the irony of killing a powerhouse, decades old, wild and fit, incredibly ecologically fit fish that has survived and spawned for many years. Let's start killing those to fund someone that, wow, who would have guessed? It's his buddy's hatchery, to fund a hatchery to raise redfish that all the time and energy and financial investment that would go into it, you could just do something to actually protect your wild fish. So that happened in April. This angling community is no... Louisianans have never been shy to begin with. They're extra extra emboldened now to stand up for their resources with recent history in management. And so you have those changes for the first time in 35 years. You have moments like this where these guys stand up to this bad bill and protect their bull reds. And now you look at, you know, some common sense stuff happening about like, we just can't be spotlighting these fish and shooting broadheads in their domes every night at 1 a.m. So the track record for redfish in Louisiana, starting to get a really good one when it comes to conservation. And that when you look at some of the other fisheries we talk about around the Gulf and around the East Coast, not in a mission critical danger zone, right? We're not saying that no one should be allowed to keep a redfish and that there's about four left. No, what an incredible, incredible resource. But the writing's on the wall that things are starting to trend downward. And so you start to make these decisions now. And from our perspective, you look at all the other things going on with marsh loss and other things that the bayou is dealing with right now. I mean, you make the right decisions and things just always stay at that level. What an incredible place, what a worthy place to travel to. So good news on the policy front. I don't know if you have any quick thoughts you want to add on 604, or just say Representative Orgeron, send him something for Father's Day. But
yeah, thanks to Ty and Catch for giving testimony on that. But, you know, I'm just going to state the facts on that. Representative Orgeron has known this guy named Randy Pausina forever. We're not going to get into the history of that. Randy is associated with a hatchery in Mississippi. Randy is having trouble finding funding. Maybe, who knows? And then Representative Orgeron wants to sell tags for $25 to kill a big redfish. And they based the $25 off what it would cost the hatchery to grow a fingerling redfish. Not a 40-year-old powerhouse DNA. Never said what that's worth, because you're probably going to need a million fingerling redfish to replace that one big redfish that you killed for $25. It really showed a lack of, on it, on the best way to look at it is that it shows a massive lack of understanding on how important wild giant redfish are. The worst case scenario is some backwards ass Louisiana something or other to fund a private hatchery. So you decide. I don't know.
Easy decision.
Yeah, but you know what? It's going to come back around. He's going to do it again. He's going to say something about it again. And the last thing that I'll say is this, like, as far as Louisiana goes, we will not have that information on that cold kill probably until sometime in October. A lot of fish died. Depending on where you're fishing, it's either not so good or, you know, maybe it didn't impact certain areas as much because the fish could get to deeper water quicker. But we'll get that information. But I promise you this from the bottom of my heart. They sure do wish that they had gone to three fish instead of four, like we had suggested, because that would have given them a little bit of a buffer when nature kind of kicks you in the hoo-haws. And I know they feel that way. So this is the worst job in the world, because when you're right, you feel terrible. One of those things, like, you don't want to be right. Yeah. Yeah. When you're right, you feel worse. So it's the thought moving forward. So Cody, we're mowing through stuff. I mean, I guess, you know, legislatively on the federal side, we got Congressman Huffman.
That's where I was going next. If you want to hop on that real quick, that's perfect.
Yeah. He's trying to reauthorize Magnus and Stevens again. It's the same version as the last go around. The forage fish legislation is included in there as well. And I want to explain this to y'all, right? There is a forage fish bill that is included in this Magnuson reauthorization package. Because Magnuson is federal waters, the forage fish bill does not include menhaden, shad, and herring. That is not a big thing, right? I mean, well, okay, let me rephrase that. That is not a bad thing. They're doing what they can do. I'm not going to criticize it, but I don't want people to think that this is a solution for menhaden, because menhaden as a species are not included in the forage fish bill. It's just a function of state management versus federal management. So the forage fish bill is not a bad thing. Menhaden aren't in it, because most of the fishery occurs, you know, within state waters. So a lot more going on the federal side too, that probably deserves a podcast of its own. But yeah, I mean, holy crap. Did we leave anything out, Cody?
No, I think, I mean, yes, right? Because we're up to so many things, but no, in the grand scheme of, I think, just a little bit of a recap and getting back on track.
We put some telemetry tags in Atlantic Bonito. We want to do a little bit of research on them too. Partnered with our friends at the Nature Conservancy. They were deployed out in North Carolina. That year class is getting bigger.
And they're here early this year. And shout out to everyone who's been catching them for weeks now, up north, and seeing some bigger ones. I got to fish off of, did a guided trip last August, early August. And crazy how many fish there were ripping around and some of the blitzes we saw and stuff. So really cool fishery. And you see some of the changes and considerations going on with them right now. Just continue to preserve what is a really good resource.
Huge shout out to Mass DMF for putting in the fantastic Albion Bonito regulations with the 5 fish aggregate. Massive thank you to actually Greg Skomel was the one who kind of took charge on that, the leadership from Dan McKiernan and the rest of the team at Mass DMF that helped produce all the awesome science. And thank you for all of our advocates in the public reaching out and supporting them as well. So look, it's kind of been a blockbuster couple of months, but we never want to lose sight that this medium is a fantastic way to reach people. We appreciate your time so much. There's a lot.
On that note.
Yeah.
I just got back from DC, as you're aware, doing some work for Everglades Restoration, McAtmister Clean Water, Everglades Foundation, a bunch of other groups that organize this big Everglades Summit, which is not fisheries related, but, fisheries are dependent on that. So that was all great work. But you just said, you know, getting back on the track with this medium here and recognizing the value. And, we'll give a quick shout out to our friends at McAtmister Clean Water who just started their own podcast. And it's just going to be about Everglades restoration. But one of the things that they said on episode one was a thank you to all the different podcasts and groups that they had been on in the past. And, you know, Daniel came on, I think he was the most recent from Captains who came on. Benny was on very early in the guidepost. And they just recognized the value of these long form conversations. And so for those who have already listened this far, you are officially part of our group that listens to podcasts for an hour and really cares about in-depth topics. And so go check out the Captainster Clean Water podcast, available, I believe, on all the same platforms that we are. But we'll give them a little bit of love. It was really cool to be in DC again, Tony, on the Hill. Enjoyed our last time up there, and this one, no different. Really cool focus this time on Everglades restoration through the lens of economics. And we have some really cool stuff in the works with Ben, that we're working towards as well. But how powerful, you know, I had one conversation, Tony, we're talking about the specific congressional staffer, was fly fisherman. And I said, I can talk to you and tell you, you know, why we should care about X and Y, because you get it. You've had that spiritual moment, that emotional moment, that moral expectation about your experience and wanting to protect it and putting that fish back and recognizing the value of that fish for the experience. But how impactful when we have economic side of this for people that don't feel that same connection. And that's okay. We're the outdoorsmen. We're the ones that do feel that, whether we're harvesting or releasing or everywhere in between. But some people can only see dollars and cents. And how impactful when you have this data to show how important our natural resources are to our economics. And so there was a really cool perspective throughout this entire trip. There's a looking at the glades through an economic lens, and really excited to continue to develop the resources we have to have those conversations about our fisheries, inshore, nearshore fisheries, through dollars and cents. Newsflash, they worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Big dollars.
Cody, not such big words. They're just starting to listen to us again.
Yeah, exactly. Mucho dollars. Mucho dollars.
So Yeah, we're still going to be playing catch up, everyone. But, you know, I think we owe it to all of y'all to just stay true to that, true to this, true to all of y'all. So this is what we've been doing. Cody, we're going to put out pretty soon here. We got a podcast with Greg Scommel. Names come up a lot in this podcast. And then we have the rest of Ben's Econ series. And then we'll have all the new content that we'll be recording. So I can't tell you what's next, but I sure do appreciate y'all listening to this one.
Well, let's cue up that little guitar here again. It's been far too long. Thank y'all for listening to the Guideposts, and we'll see you on here again soon. Welcome back in the saddle, boys and girls.